This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Our special guest today is Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is the Vice President and Chief Economist of the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 200,000 members dedicated to the advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of the housing market and brokerage industry trends, member communication, and membership development activities. She is also closely involved in the association's strategic planning efforts and is a well-known speaker in California real estate community. Leslie, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Bruce. Great to be here.
One of the things that I've constantly heard over the last couple of years, and it's low inventory levels. So how have low inventory levels affected sales volume and an impact on price? And here's why I'm asking this. I would think if inventory levels were really low and they were matched with a lot of capacity to buy, we'd have really aggressive price increases, which we're really not. So that low inventory, what's it affecting?
Well, so you're saying that in the context of low inventory would just kind of be a spur for people to list their homes?
Well, maybe they're not doing that. Maybe they don't have the confidence level that they could get qualified, and so we have inventory that's not showing up. But the levels of inventory, you know, what, about 4 months or something like that?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem extraordinary low. It's sort of, you know, maybe a little bit low, but not like 2 months or San Francisco, well, 2 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, you know, well, it is, so you have kind of a data problem, which is pocket listings might be impacting that number. So we started calculating unsold inventory in the 80s, and it's very simple. It's a ratio of listings to sales.
Right.
So currently, if inventory is around 4, it means that the current rate property is selling, you're going to be out of inventory in 4 months. Now, up until about 4 years ago, if you were to ask me what normal inventory is, I would say a 6 to 7 month supply, because that was the long run average, right?
Correct.
If you look at the last 4 to 5 years, it's been between 2, 3, and 4. And I think that this is a structural change in normal inventory. And there's a couple of different reasons, but I want to point my finger at the baby boomers, because I think demographics is part of this. They're a big group. They are either voluntarily or have to work longer than their parents did. Many of them love their jobs, and some of them are still trying to recover from investment decisions that were made in the past. But we know that when you look at turnover rates, the turnover of the California housing stock varies. But just to pick out the late 70s, it was 8 to 9% a year. And the last few years, we've been between 4 and 4.5%, like half what we were. So another data point is the survey that we do every year, and we've talked about this, where we ask California realtors about their last closed transaction, and one of the questions is, how long had your seller been in the home? So these are people that actually sold. And the last 2 years, the average has been 10 years, and that's the highest in the 38 years we've done the survey. So that's kind of another data point. We know that over 70% of the Californians over 55 have not moved since 1999. Not to throw too many numbers out there, but the point is, boomers aren't moving because they're working longer, they're healthier longer, they want to stay in the game longer, their idea of retirement is not necessarily going to Sun City retirement community somewhere. They also have children that need their help. So you hear more and more about married children with kids moving in with the parents, right? And they're going to inherit that house and help their parents as they get older.
Wow, that sounds like Italy.
Yeah, right? I mean, and you hear about parents. We did a survey of boomers, and like 3/4 of them said they were going to help their kids buy a home, or they'd already done so, you know. So realizing that if they don't help their kids get into housing in California, the kids are going to have to go somewhere else. And then the other component that Dr. Richard Green at the Lusk Center talks about a lot is just the fact that people aren't getting married like they used to. So they're getting married either not at all, or they're getting married later. And if you look at home ownership and correct for, you know, age and ethnicity and income, it's really marriage that is the, you know, bouncing off point for home ownership. So it's a very complex situation, but the results are really clear. These people aren't listing their homes. If, you know, you're right, they could sell it quickly. The prices are great, but where are they going to go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they want to stay in their own area, I heard a story from a realtor up in Pleasanton, you know, up in Contra Costa County, saying, or in the East Bay, saying, you know, I had a client who is renting out their big, you know, Center Hall Colonial, and they've moved to a senior apartment because that's what made sense for them to be able to stay in the area. So I think that's kind of why it's a tough nut to crack, you know. And when you talk to boomers, you know, like 64% of the ones we surveyed said, I'm not moving when I retire. You know, they're going out horizontally. They're not going to sell. You know, it's just a whole interesting change in the dynamic.
Well, and what you're talking about, they're not moving out of their home. An even greater percentage won't be moving out of the area. They'll be shifting maybe the size of the house they have. But a lot of people really stay within a pretty tight distance. Isn't that correct?
Well, I think it is, and again, it depends on, I think, where your kids and grandchildren are, but there certainly is a huge desire to be close enough to visit and so on, if that's possible.
When I was young, way back when, looking for a home, I mean, the new builder was building the starter home. That was really a common thing, and now it isn't.
You know, this whole thing on new construction is really tough, you know, and we spent a long time talking about it we had a State of the State panel this week at CAR, and there are just a lot of issues. I mean, as complicated as what we were just talking about in terms of why listings are so low, the issue is why is supply so much lower than the demand, and it's complicated. You know, we've got a not in my backyard culture in California. You've had decades of downzoning. You have CEQA, which is a very necessary and well-intended law that is used to stop just about everything. I heard this really heart-wrenching story from the LA City Comptroller this week. So Ron said that there was a lawsuit against a program where feral cats were rounded up, sterilized, and released back into their habitat. And under CEQA, they were sued because of the protection of birds. And so now the feral cats are euthanized. And I just was like, that's it. You know, this has got to stop.
Wow.
But that law is used, you know, and then the defect litigation is always an issue. So, and, you know, people go, you know, you go to San Francisco, you go to downtown LA, you go to areas where you see a lot of new construction, but you have to realize for many years there wasn't much going on in terms of construction. And on the demand side, we are just swamping whatever is coming on the market.
Well, let's say the counties that haven't recovered in price, so Riverside, San Bernardino, Kern, Sacramento, that their construction-based economies and a lot of the inventory would not pencil yet, especially if it was a small structure.
Right, but you know, that's changing. I mean, I'm looking at the February data for job growth. Fresno had the fastest growth in February at 3.7%. Number two was the Inland Empire at 3.5%, and number three was Modesto at a 3.1%. So what you're going to see is more movement of jobs out to areas where housing is affordable, and I think that will put more upward pressure on prices, and you have a more business kind of a development-friendly environment because there's more land.
Definitely, we're attracting jobs, and it's that the builder, when they look at the expense of carving up a lot, and they say, okay, now that I've gotten here at whatever level they are, 100 grand for the building lot, the building fees are 50 grand, and they can build a 3,000 square foot house as opposed to a 1,400 square foot house, they're going to push that if they can.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, just that's,
yeah. So the entry level is really hard. We visited a community outside of, well, in San Jose, but kind of on the outskirts, called was Cottle Transit Station a week ago, and you know the prices were from $700,000 to $900,000, and it was kind of like three story townhomes, and this is like entry level in Silicon Valley adjacent. So it really makes you rethink, like, what do we mean by entry level and who's going to be able to afford it?
One of the charts, and this was in the other segment, and you had mentioned talking about how rents were going up. There was something about Oakland, median income was below $50,000 and the median rent was $3,000.
Right.
And you're
right.
Just going, how's that possible?
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, it's gentrification, right?
Right.
And so you have people leaving San Francisco and the peninsula and moving just across the bay to Oakland, which is a beautiful community, and picking up properties that maybe need some work and certainly look affordable compared to the 1.3 million median in San Francisco. And so the neighborhood character starts to change, and there's the usual kind of gentrification issues. But for people that are living there and renting, you know, it's $3,000 for the median rent in Oakland. Like, who can afford that?
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, that's equivalent to a lot of purchase of real estate at 4%
right.
interest rate.
Well, there's a big disconnect, right? And again, it's all about location. And as we discussed earlier, people are voting with their feet, not necessarily because they want to, but because they have to.
Okay. If I look at a chart, first-time buyers certainly below their participation rate of normal.
Yes.
So is it just about affordability, or is there any lingering hesitancy about wanting to own something that maybe did damage the last cycle? Is there any lingering for that?
I don't see any evidence of that. And there may be, but the demand just so far outshadows it that it's not visible. But the data that we've done in our surveys and what others have done in this area, you know, Fannie has a confidence survey, a lot of other people do, shows that this is a generation that is very smart and savvy, and they know home ownership is probably a good bet for them, and it's just an affordability thing. So I don't think it's I don't see any data that supports this, oh, I don't want to own. You know, there definitely seems to be the recognition that this is something that they want to do. They just don't have the always the information to make that happen. You know, we started surveying generationally because we did hear 3 or 4 years ago not only the point you were making about I've been burned or my parents were burned, so I'm not going in, but also the idea of mobility and the fact the shared economy and owning just isn't where I need to be. But, you know, I'm working literally 10 minutes from downtown Los Angeles, which is in the biggest renaissance of the last 40 years in terms of condo development and apartment development. And it has a young vibe like I've never seen, you know, so I don't see evidence for that, at least not yet, or not anymore.
We're at affordability number, what, about 31, something in that
yes.
range? Okay.
Yes.
Now, historically, that's not low.
You know, it varies by region, right? So if you're in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, it's 10%.
And they have their own history. You're right. But just the state number being 31, you have pockets of plenty of affordability, even above their norm. So Riverside would be above their bottom if you looked at 89 and 2006 and 80 even. They probably will be way higher. So when we say we have an affordability problem, is that the payment ratio, or is it we're not being able to get a yes answer from a lender under the current circumstances?
I think it's you can't find the home. You know,
okay.
Yes, we're buying the median priced home and you can afford it. Where is it? So one of the charts that I use looks at the mismatch between job growth and units, right? So in L.A. County, from 2010 through 2016, I don't number somewhere around, 190,000 new jobs?
Yeah.
And less than 100,000 new units.
I saw that chart for the first time. That was an amazing chart.
Right, it is. So there's a mismatch between where the jobs are being created and where the housing stock is. So, you know, the affordability index, and this actually reminds me of how we first started talking in the first place, right, back in the day, is really a methodological construct, you know, and it allows you to compare today with other periods, and is it tighter or is it looser? But it doesn't look at the issue really directly of inventory and what's available for sale. So you can't really find that median priced home in the areas where the job growth is strong. And that's really the conundrum.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's changed in this cycle that we've had, where we've had pretty good price run up, is the conservative nature of the owner. Because if you were in 2004 and 5, you had a credit line, an equity line put on your home, and you might be buying two other houses, where this time that hasn't happened. We haven't borrowed money out.
Well, I hope that's true. I mean, I do hear rumblings about equity loans and, you know, household debt is recovering and so on. But I do think people are, they have short memories, but we're still in that short memory period. So I hope that is true, because, you know, and you and I agree on this, right? One of the things people don't talk enough about is the role that cash out refis played in the disaster we all experienced. And I'm hoping that isn't attractive again.
I wouldn't want them to outlaw either,
out
refi or a credit line, because you can be pretty entrepreneurial with a credit line.
Absolutely, but you have to be smart about it, and a lot of people weren't,
no.
Right? They cashed out, and they bought a boat and went to Italy, and then there's no cushion for a downturn.
You know, one of the things we hadn't talked about, but maybe it's not as a big influence at this point, but cash buyers were a really dominant player for quite a while. And so that would have been very difficult to compete if you were an FHA buyer.
Absolutely. And there's still some of that. I mean, investors aren't quite as active as they were a few years ago. China has made it harder to get money out. They're really enforcing that 50,000 cap. And so that has made it a little bit more competitive for first-time home buyers. So that's very positive for them.
So what do you think first of all, any surprises from the year 2016?
You know, I guess I'm just surprised that we continue to have such a static market in a way, and I'm talking about sales. I realize now that when people ask me if we're at the peak of the market, that they're always asking about price, and I'm always thinking about the number of transactions, so I have to really specify that. But, you know, we bottomed in the fall of 2007, and we came roaring back with, you know, inland properties selling for less than replacement cost and first-time and repeat buyer tax credits. But if you look at the last 5 years and you consider the rebound in jobs, incomes, household formation, and the record low rates, I would have thought we'd see transactions 20 or 25% higher than they have been. And that's why I spend so much time talking about inventory and supply constraints and housing affordability. So I guess I was just surprised that we're still kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And then just how dramatic the migration data is, and how migration data within and going out of California is a housing story.
With the charts that we have, instead of looking at 400,000 sales, we should be looking at 500.
Right.
And,
right.
And I am surprised at that, too. And I think that impacts the lack of aggression on the median price, or
yes,
price in general, just because they're just,
yes,
there isn't the push that looks like there should naturally be.
Right. Right.
What's your feeling about the overall economy going forward? Let's say a couple of years. Every chart that I look at, there at some point in the next 2 years, we're due a recession, but I'm not sure where the direction would be for that. So, just
well,
want
actually,
your
I thought this year was the seventh year that we were due, or whatever year. All the numbers people, I think, have been saying we're due for a recession, and I kept saying, in order to have that cycle work, you really need to have a much stronger recovery, and we've had a very lackluster recovery. So there's a lot of uncertainty, right? I mean, the Trump administration is looking at a 4% growth rate. Most economists are saying, I don't see how you can possibly get there given the demographics of the labor force, you know, that it's older and it's less productive than we had hoped. So there's a lot of unknowns. You know, I think the concerns that I have are a little bit longer term, and they have to do with jobs, right? Because housing, household income, household formation really lives upon a foundation of a good job. And when you look at the Rust Belt and Appalachia and what happened to that area of the country, it's, you look at jobs, right? And so I'm looking at artificial intelligence. I'm looking at robotics. I, you know, applaud job creation in any form, but bringing in low-paying jobs back to the United States is not the solution. It really is education and teaching. You know, I think every tech company ought to open an office in Appalachia and teach those kids in middle school how to code, because they're smart and they just need to be part of this future that we're all living in. But I think that's one of the big uncertainties that that I have, is, and I have faith that there will be other jobs. I mean, 30 years ago, did anybody think the cell phone industry would look like it is and be as large as it is? So I want to just do, this isn't even a plug, it's just a book recommendation. I just think this book was fabulous, and it came out a couple of years ago. It's by an economics professor at Berkeley named Enrico Moretti. And the book is called The New Geography of Jobs. And just explaining where jobs grow and why and what these clusters look like. But I will tell you, the thing that has stayed with me, having read this book 3 or 4 years ago, is the introduction where he talks about a guy, he may have been a college professor, I can't remember, but it's 1968 or 1969, he's in the Bay Area, and he is trying to decide where to move, where to buy a home to raise his family, and the two cities that he's looking at are very comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the two cities are Menlo Park and Visalia.
Hmm.
And today, right, 2017, you're like, what?
Hmm.
But in the late 1960s, they looked very similar in terms of income and education and school quality and crime. So that's really the bouncing off point for his thesis about what happened in Silicon Valley and what can we learn to kind of foster job growth in other parts of the country. So I think, to me, it's all about housing, but before housing, it's all about jobs.
And with that, Leslie, we are out of time. I want to thank you for what you do for the industry, and I really appreciate you guys providing all those charts that I would be lost without. So I really appreciate that.
Bruce, my data is your data, and it's always delightful to spend time speaking with you.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.